Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Earlier this month, President Obama called for a national sense of urgency to limit gun violence. But like so many, he lumped all gun violence together, from the 2012 massacre at Sandy Hook Elementary in Connecticut to the shootings on the streets of Chicago. But domestic gun violence and mass school shootings are very different from youth gun violence. So why are they being lumped together? On today's Your Call, we are talking specifically about youth gun violence. Youth gun violence, or gun violence, I should say, is responsible for 84,000 injuries and 33,000 deaths a year in the United States. This is according to UCSF and Highland Hospital. The report found that when we talk about youth gun violence, 1 in 20 survivors are likely to die within 5 years from another shooting. A few weeks ago, Oakland's Public Safety Council introduced new ordinances preventing the possession of large-capacity gun magazines with exemptions for police officers. The council also introduced the Safe Storage Act, which requires residents to keep firearms in a locked container or accessible with a trigger lock. Despite the nationwide effort to reduce gun injuries, violence intervention programs for victims of systemic gun violence are sparse, especially for youth. Highland Hospital and San Francisco General are some of the first trauma centers in the country to create initiatives dedicated to connecting gunshot victims with resources to keep them from re-entering the revolving cycle of violence. Joining us to discuss these issues are two guests. Demetria Huntsman is the Teens on Target Program Director with Youth Alive. Teens on Target trains high school students and young adults from neighborhoods with high levels of violence to present violence prevention workshops to middle and high school students. And Demetria joins us from her office in Oakland. Hi, Demetria. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Good morning. It's great to have you. And John Panetta is Leadership and Curriculum Specialist with Motivating Individual Leadership for Public Advancement, or MILPA, in Salinas. The organization's approach to social transformation is grounded in La Cultura Cura, which promotes cultural healing. And John joins me in studio. He drove almost 3 hours to get here from Salinas. We appreciate that so much, John, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much, Rosalie. I appreciate the opportunity to be here.
It's great to have you. It's Rose.
Oh, Rose, I'm so sorry.
It's okay. It's fine. So, Demetria, I want to start off with you. You know, what really strikes me about this conversation we're having about gun violence is the fact that President Obama, to so many politicians, are talking about gun violence, period. They're talking about domestic gun violence, Sandy Hook, violence on the streets of Chicago. They're lumping it all together. And isn't it true that we really need to talk about all of these issues separately?
It's absolutely true that we need to talk about these issues separately, because the factors that create these outcomes of homicide are very different. And there is no one solution, even in the form of gun control, that would be able to really deal with the homicide and the violence that we see due to guns in our country. You know, politicians seem to go for, you know, what is the larger sort of large focus of incidents, and unfortunately they seem to be really random. Mass shootings are definitely a little bit more random than the interpersonal violence that leads to a homicide that we see in our communities on a daily basis.
And John, what are your thoughts on this? According to a report from the Center for American Progress, young people are the victims of gun violence at higher rates than older people. In 2010, the second most frequent cause of death for people between the ages of 15 and 24 was homicide. 83% of those homicides were committed with a gun.
Well, my thought on that, you know, just to give like kind of a firsthand perspective on it, you know, our youth are out there being criminalized. They're being secluded to, like, single radiuses where there's a lack of access to fresh fruits and vegetables. There's no investment, really, into, like, maybe even providing a summer job or anything like that. It's kind of like you're stuck right here. Your parents aren't making that much money. A lot of times they're not even home. They're working long hours. And some of our parents may be a little messed up, too. And I don't want to blame the parents or anything like that. But there's systems and structures that are in charge of budget allocations and things of that nature. So it's a little bit hard to start blaming the youth for things that take place when they're just caught up in the struggle to survive.
What do you think about the conversation that's happening at the national level about gun violence?
Well, I think it's one thing to address gun violence, But it's another thing to start to look at all the dynamics of why things are taking place. And, you know, as opposed to just saying, oh, my God, guns are bad, all the, you know, okay, I understand. But at the same time, we got to start thinking about thinking outside of the box like everybody else says, because what we're really doing at, in some instances, is placing people into boxes. We're compartmentalizing them and then wondering why all there's all this, like, powder keg eruption going on.
Right. Dimitri, what would you add to that?
I would agree with exactly what he's saying, and the bottom line is that, you know, we can't treat the symptoms without treating what is the root of the illness. And what seems to be happening is, as we see all of these outcomes of gun violence, we're not dealing with poverty, we're not dealing with racism, we're not dealing with all of the things, gentrification, that is affecting our economy, that is affecting access and jobs and, you know, and all of the things that could create options for a healthy lifestyle outside of being subjected to gun violence.
Well, we'll definitely talk about the root causes of this, but I also wanted to just throw out some numbers, because Oakland tends to get most of the media attention when it comes to youth violence. A report from the Violence Poverty Center shows that Monterey County actually ranks highest statewide in the homicide rate for victims ages 10 to 24, followed by San Francisco County, San Joaquin County, and then Alameda County. And I'm guessing, John, that a lot of people who live in San Francisco don't know, for example, what's going on in Salinas.
Yeah, I would imagine so. A lot of the people within Monterey County and Salinas themselves turn a blind eye themselves, too, and don't really take the time to consider or try to understand what's really happening on the ground level. You know, there's a lot of people out there that are hurting, and so it gets lumped up and we're looked at through this, like, big old magnifying glass rather than looking at a microscope and looking at individuals and seeing what they're really dealing with. A lot of us have, like, brothers, uncles, whoever, who are victims of violence. So when there's nothing done to address that trauma other than, like, let's go to the peer guidance counselor. How are you doing today? I'm fine. You know, and you walk right back out into the streets, chances are you're going to run into somebody who may be connected to this in some way, shape, or form or another. And a lot of it has to do with being in a densely populated area, lack of resources in regards to how are you going to go to school, how are you going to pay for it, how are you going to take care of it. And even when you do get to the college level, sometimes in our community college, for better or for worse, you're looked at like you really don't belong there. And that's traumatizing in itself, too, when they tell you education's the key to success. But once you go to get that key, they're looking at you like you don't deserve it. So, yeah, there's a whole lot of things going on, and I don't know how deep you'd like me to get. It gets really, really deep.
Get as deep as you'd like.
So when we look at Salinas, the agricultural capital of the world, or whatever, the salad bowl of the world, you know, there's, I forgot how many trucks, I think 1,000 to 1,200 big rigs leaving every day, exporting produce all around the nation. So when you look at the agricultural structure and how much money it's generating, but when you start to look at, like, the billions of dollars that are coming in and the little drops or crumbs that are being spread out to the area in which a lot of those farm workers live, you start to see, like, wow, why is this? If they're working so hard, you know, I worked out in the fields myself. My family's a long line of field workers. My grandmother still works out there to this day. And you start to see how their bodies are breaking down and how their children are left unattended. And you don't even get overtime until after 10 hours a day. You're making minimum wage to supply the whole nation. And then when the money comes in, the people who are in charge of allocating that budget, you know, for better or for worse, they just give about like 10% or 3% to the population in which I'd say really deserves it or really, really needs it. I understand you want to revamp another part of the city and make it look a little bit nicer, make you feel a little safer. But what about the people where all this stuff is happening? So we actually engage that population. We work with them because it's our firm belief that those closest to the problem are closest to the solution.
Mm. John Panetta is Leadership and Curriculum Specialist with Motivating Individual Leadership for Public Advancement, or MILPA, in Salinas. The organization's approach to transforming youth is grounded in La Cultura Cura, which promotes cultural healing. We're also joined by Demetria Huntsman, Teens on Target Program Director of Youth Alive. They train high school students and young adults from neighborhoods with high levels of violence to present violence prevention workshops to middle school and high school students. Today we are talking specifically about youth gun violence. There's a very needed conversation happening at the national level, but all of these different kinds of gun violence are lumped together, whether it's Sandy Hook, domestic gun violence, youth gun violence, road rage gun violence. But these issues are very separate and they need to be talked about separately. So that's what we're doing on today's show, talking specifically about youth gun violence. And if you'd like to join us, if you work for an organization that focuses on these issues, if you've been affected directly by youth gun violence, if you work with youth, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Demetria, another thing that politicians are doing, especially Republicans, are saying that we need to just spend more money dealing with mental health issues, and that will deal with the gun violence. And they're not at all talking about the issues that John just brought up.
No, they're not. I do want to say that also, when you talk about resources, again, it seems to be an issue when the resources are not being directed in ways that could treat the source of the issue. So when you talk about the high death rates in the Monterey County area, and you're talking about, well, they don't have trauma centers and they don't have the social services to respond when shootings occur, then people are more likely to die from homicide. Versus here, you know, we do have our program is a first responder. We have all these different programs and organizations. We have Highland Hospital as a base for trauma response to these conditions, and we're able and more likely, you know, with those resources to save more lives. But again, on the ground, when you talk about just preventing the violence itself, yes, pouring resources into mental health, who would say that that would not be helpful? But again, that's lumping everything into one solution. And you know, when you're looking at the Sandy Hook or what's happening in a mass school shooting or a mass movie theater shooting, and you're looking at those individuals who have some mental health concerns, most of the times those shootings involve legal guns. They're legal. They might be owned by a parent or some other adult that someone, you know, an unhealthy mindset got access to. But the guns that we see on the street that are involved in interpersonal conflict or that are just involved in some situation that escalated between individuals, those guns are usually illegal guns. And they've been passed over and passed over and passed over. And at some point they were legal, and yet they've been shipped in, they've been sold over and over and over again, you know, in urban communities to make money. And so in that way, pouring money into mental health services is not at all going to treat the issues of gun violence that we see on the ground in our communities, in urban environments every day.
Well, and Demetria, to that point, what did you think about the Oakland's Public Safety Council recent announcement to introduce new ordinances, for example, preventing the possession of large capacity gun magazines, or introducing the Safe Storage Act, which requires residents to keep firearms in a locked container?
You know, these ordinances, oftentimes they start out with a good intention, I believe, but ultimately I've seen them be used to criminalize people who have access to guns or whatever, and usually they're not going to help, again, what is on the ground with the illegal guns that are in the community. There needs to be something targeting, you know, not just how we criminalize, but how we limit the access to the weapons, but at the same time, how do we also affect those root causes so that people don't even feel that they need to use a weapon or that they need to access a weapon because they're not involved or they're not, you know, limited in their options just to survive.
What would you add to that, John?
Well, you know, I like how she almost said like these Band-Aid fixes, because that's what a lot of those ordinances are. You know, say they pass something to take everybody's gun away, which, you know, I hope they don't, but say they do. What's going to happen next when there's still the same situations, the same circumstances? People are going to start picking up knives or bats or what, and we're going to outlaw those too? You know, there really has to be something done to address the root of the problem. And when you're pouring all this money into like these mental health services, while that may be, you know, good, some people can benefit from that, a lot of our population, what I've seen myself personally too, will not access that resource based on the fact that you're kind of hinting towards that I'm weak, I'm stupid, I don't have the mental capacity to deal with my day-to-day life. No, I'm cool, I don't want to deal with that. But really, we might have some things that are happening going on mentally, you know, we might be acting out or whatever, but really there's needs to be some focus on the spiritual wellness for one, two, and also just engaging individuals and showing them that there's something else. You know, you can do something else, and not just show it to them, guide them through the process, build them up, start from the ground, and understand that it's going to be a very, very hard process. Myself, I invested about, I'd say 12 years in the criminal justice system, youth and as an adult. And when I came home and tried to do good and everything, I didn't know how. When they offered me an opportunity, I didn't know how to take it. I didn't know how to take any type of help. But really what I was dealing with was a little bit of spiritual sickness. I wasn't, you're taught to just think. You think, therefore you are. But, you know, we understand that people feel too. So you have to start looking at how are we going to, if you're saying it's a problem, a monster, the elephant in the room or whatever, how are we going to address it from several different ways?
What was it that got you to find a different path?
Well, you know, I was a victim of gun violence myself at the age of 18. I got shot, didn't really trip off of it, went to the doctor, and it was all crazy. They wanted to call the cops, and so I just walked out and didn't really do anything else. Went on a long spree of just spiraling out of control. And when it came time, when it was like, you know, your daughter needs you, your kids need you, you got two strikes, you need to do something. And once I found out there was kind of nothing I could do, not too many places want to hire somebody with a record like mine. School was my last ditch effort. I went to school. Turns out I'm like fairly intellectual. So I got offered an opportunity to work, and people were really like investing in me and telling me, you know, you deserve to be here. You belong to be here. Voice your opinion. Let us know what's really going on inside of that institution. What's going on where you live? And you know what? As a matter of fact, call up some of your people too so they could let us know what's going on. So we started engaging folks. We started getting engaged. And then what, like the turning point for myself was when I was actually told, you know what, mijo? You're a blessing. We love you. You deserve to be here. You have elders. You have a community. You have a family. You have a whole network that loves you, and we're going to build you up to honor your sacred purpose in life. I had never been told anything like that, didn't know how to receive that. And as I was shown, like, these people genuinely did care about me, and there wasn't no carrot being dangled in front of me. It was like, here's your carrot right here. Eat it, and let's go for a walk, and let's talk about some of your career trajectory, your life trajectory. What do you want? Instead of telling me, this is what you need. Go do this.
Dimitri, I'm sure this sounds pretty, I'm sure you've heard stories like these with the youth and the older people that you work with.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Can you elaborate on what John said, and maybe if you have a story you'd like to share about some of the youth you work with?
I've worked with several students over the years, and it's unfortunate that, you know, they oftentimes get criminalized themselves, and they're often seen as a problem, and yet they really, you know, want to change their community for the better. I have consistently been able to run a program with 30 to 45 students after school, 2 days a week, working diligently on understanding violence and its root causes, and developing in ways that they could reach out and share a message, and to empower middle school students to have healthy solutions to violence. I have a student, I have several students, I have students who have lost family members to gun violence. I have students themselves who have been shot at, who have been survivors of gun violence, who deal with and live with the trauma on a daily basis. The important thing is we have to continue to create these opportunities where students can stand up and they can participate in changing this violence that we see, where they are not seen as criminals, where they are not just sort of dubbed off as, oh, that's just gang violence, oh, that was just, something that they need to basically just be, you know, criminalized for incarcerated or on probation or, and all of those systems that really don't provide the support that they need. I'm happy in hearing his story that, he got the support that he needed and that someone tapped into who he is and what he needs, and then those opportunities were presented to him, and then he was able to make that change. And unfortunately, we have to fight so hard to make those things happen and to secure the resources for violence prevention services, for these programs and services that are on the ground empowering young people. Right. And we just need more of that.
We were talking about resources that are or are not available. John, what else is available in Salinas? I understand that MILPA was developed about 3 years ago, and your group just hit the ground running.
Yeah, we were kind of told by our elders, here's the torch. We're getting up there. We're not saying we're putting it down, but we're going to share it with you. But one thing you need to understand is when you grab this, man, this is the movement, and you're going to be moving constantly. So we really took that very, very dearly. We took that to our heart, and we are really passionate and still are and always will be passionate about standing up for what's right. There's that saying, you can only get them off your back when you stand up. So we stood up, and we ran, and we just started building, started collaborating with other individuals, trying to figure out what is really out there. And I know there are some resources out in our area, but the fact remains, and I hate to be so blunt, that a lot of our folks don't relate to those people, and it takes something a little bit differently, to engage the population that you really want to engage. If you want to make the type of change you want to change or you want to create, you have to engage these individuals and you have to be able to relate to them. And if you can't relate to them, you have to be able to just say, you know what, that's just how it's going to be for right now. Be very, very patient. And we have numerous youth who come into our office that, they're dealing with some stuff out there. They're still in the thick of it. And we're asked some questions like, hey, what do I do about this situation? What do I do about this? And to the point we even have individuals asking us, my younger homie, what do I do with him? He's strapped up. He's doing this. I don't know what to say to him. All you do is you let him know that he has a spot right here. And whenever you feel willing to come in through our doors, come on in. We're going to accept you how you come. We're not going to change you. We're not going to try to do any of that stuff where we're going to point the finger at you and say it's your fault. We understand you've been through some stuff, and we're going to work with you from there and just take you as you're a blessing. So we have we call them circulos, which is a circle, which is part of the healing informed approach of La Cultura Cura. We circle up every week, Thursday, 5:30 to 7 o'clock, sometimes 8 o'clock, and we're talking about, I don't really want to say issues, but the things that are going on with inside of our community, and really taking that popular education approach to, all right, collectively, what do we feel that we need right here? And a part of our other work is the advocacy aspect of it. So we actually take what's said, not everything, because it we do have confidentiality with inside of those circles. But when we have a suggested solution that just seems like it's golden, we're going to run with it, and we're going to let these folks know.
John Panetta is Leadership and Curriculum Specialist with MILPA, Motivating Individual Leadership for Public Advancement in Salinas. Dimitri Huntsman is the Teens on Target Program Director of Youth Alive in Oakland. Today, we are talking about specifically gun violence, the root of these problems, and how politicians and other leaders should talk specifically about gun violence rather than lumping all gun violence into the same category. This is your call, and we'll be back after this.
This is Your Call on KALW, a show that relies on engaged listeners. You can join today's conversation by calling 866-798-7233. TALK. That's toll free 866-798-8255. Or you can post a comment or question at yourcallradio.org, where you'll also find links related to today's show. KLW is the media sponsor for the Moth Story Slam, where you're invited to share a 5-minute story on a specific theme every month. Courage is the topic for this month's Moth Story Slam, happening tomorrow, Tuesday, January 26th at Public Works in San Francisco. 11 o'clock, it's revealed from the Center for Independent Reporting, the story of the tap water in Flint, Michigan. Stay tuned.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will talk about the differences between leading Democratic presidential candidates Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton. They differ on a number of key issues like universal health care, paid family leave, Wall Street regulation, and free college tuition. And of course, guns have received so much attention from both candidates. So what do you want to know about their platforms, and what does this race mean for the future of the Democratic Party? Bernie Sanders' popularity has taken many in the Democratic National Committee by surprise, including Hillary Clinton. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can email us feedback@yourcallradio.org. And if you'd like to join today's show, we are talking about youth violence and youth gun violence. If you work on these issues, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. How do you think this is being framed in the national media, and also with politicians just talking very broadly about gun violence without talking about specific causes for youth gun violence, for example? 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Demetria Huntsman is the Teens on Target Program Director of Youth Alive, and John Panetta is Leadership and Curriculum Specialist with MILPA in Salinas. He spent 12 years behind bars. He was a victim of gun violence. He was shot at the age of 18. And according to the Violence Policy Center, Monterey County ranked highest statewide in homicide rates for victims ages 10 to 24, followed by San Francisco, San Joaquin, and Alameda. And let's hear from Lorraine. Hi, Lorraine. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Good morning. Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. Well, my name is Lorraine Taylor, and I am founder of 1,000 Mothers to Prevent Violence. Our mission is to ease the detrimental impact of violence on homicide victims, survivors, families, and friends by providing ongoing compassionate support and services. I lost my twin sons at the same time in the year 2000, 22-year-old college students, and I didn't talk to them about gun violence. And it's very necessary today to talk about gun violence. Last week I was called to speak to Safe Kids and a coalition of nonprofit organizations and community leaders on preparing a curriculum to teach kids what to do if caught in a crossfire. And that was the most difficult subject for me to process, because I can understand having to be prepared for an earthquake, because we live in earthquake country, to stop, drop, and hold. But how do you teach kids who are already leaving home many days in fear that this is a norm? It's very, very difficult to think that we have to teach kids what to do if caught in a crossfire. I didn't talk to my boys about it because I didn't think that it was necessary, but I believe that today it is necessary to talk about that.
Lorraine, I was just checking out your website, and I'm reading here that you were forced to resign from your job in 2001 and enter long-term disability due to grief-related illnesses for 5 years. What has this process been like for you? And also just reaching out and connecting with other mothers who have lost their kids to gun violence.
It's ongoing. I tell you, I thought that I was a strong woman, but when you lose your children, it's nothing like it. Not children or just a child. We're not prepared to bury our children before us at all. We're not prepared. We're not wired up that way. And I had a couple of nervous breakdowns, but I was able to pull it together when I got up off of my bed of affliction and started reaching out to other families and friends of homicide victims. I found many doing worse than I was doing. Some were trying to take their own lives. Some were drinking and drowning in alcohol and drugs. we know that's not a way, that's an escape. But it usually takes you to a more dangerous place. We try and provide peer support. I do a lot of telephone counseling. We make home visits. We have events such as the Purple Gala, an evening of healing. We also do our Walk for Healing. We'll have our seventh Walk for Healing in May to help people come together to raise awareness. And this is also a way to raise funds to keep our telephone going and our website, keep our programs and services going. It hasn't been an easy journey, and I take it day by day, step by step.
Lorraine, before we let you go, we're at a critical time right now because so many people are talking about gun violence. And as I said earlier, you know, you've got President Obama calling for a national sense of urgency. He's taking executive action. You have Oakland's Public Safety Council introducing new ordinances, you know, preventing the possession of large capacity gun magazines, for example. What changes would you like to see?
I totally agree with the president and his actions. I agree with the Oakland Public Safety Committee. We do not need AK-47s, military-style weapons on the streets of Oakland. I understand the Second Amendment rights. I don't agree that we should not have the right to defend ourselves in the case of a militia, but we don't need AK-47s these days. People have taken it out of context, and the guns are not used for the purpose intended. The end does not justify the means. It's really causing more of a problem. It's not best for the overall good of our community, I can say, having military-style weapons on the streets. If it were left up to me, there would be no guns, but I know it's not left up to me. There will be guns, but we do have to be prepared to use them effectively if necessary. I would prefer that the emphasis would be placed on conflict resolution and more love, not guns.
Mm-hmm. Well, Lorraine, thank you so much for calling in. Lorraine Franklin Taylor is founder of 1,000 Mothers to Prevent Gun Violence. It's a nonprofit based in Hayward, and we will put a link to that organization right after the show. Demetria, what about you? I mean, we're hearing these sort of specific policy changes from politicians, whether it's more gun restrictions or more money for mental health organizations. What changes would you like to see?
I would like to see more money invested in prevention. And again, all of the resources that would work towards treating the root causes of violence. We've identified poverty as one of the root causes of violence. So in the city of Oakland, we're in a mass gentrification process that is extremely rapid. Many people are being left behind in the opportunity to have jobs that create a quality of life, that allow people to have, you know, food on the table, a nice home, a comfortable living space, and our youth, too. We are able to give our youth stipends for the work that they do, for their investment in violence prevention work. And the students that we work with, they're not just reaching middle school students and high school students. They're also reaching the neighborhood kids that they live with, their cousins, their uncles, aunts, family members. This is a very on-the-ground program that is doing real work, reaching real people that are impacted by violence on a daily basis. We need to be able to continue funding that will keep these programs and services going to reach these young people and to give them these opportunities. And we also need to continue to have the resources to deal with the root causes of violence.
John, what would you add?
No, what she's saying right now is like right on track. It's like music to my ears. And, you know, we have a saying in our office that we want to go from outcomes to actual incomes because, you know, it's one thing to have an outcome, to have people no longer participating in self-sabotaging behaviors or communal sabotaging behaviors, I guess you could say. But it, you know, it always feels good to be compensated for the work that you put in, you know, and to be honored for one, for your intellectual capacity, and for two, that you're a human being that has bills that need to be paid. You know, money isn't everything, but it's something. And when we have our youth come through and we're able to offer them stipends to actually just come and not just hang out. You know, we're talking to them, we're discussing some things, asking them, how do you feel about this? How do you feel about the Sheriff Burnell having the ICE in our county jail and deporting 240 people, leaving families left with no mother or father potentially? How do you feel about that? Well, I don't like it. You know what? Let's go over here to this Board of Supervisors meeting and check out what they're talking about over here. You know what? Next week, we're going to be presenting some awards in UC Berkeley. You want to come with us? And they start to see all these things, and it's like, wow, this guy from the neighborhood, these guys from the neighborhood, they're actually doing these things, and they're paying me for it. Hey, you know what? I got a cool little job over here. They start telling their friends. They say, and exactly like Demetria had just stated, you know, we have a family in our office. We have two uncles, a niece, the Villa family. They were actually they're nephew Ruben was actually an Olympic contender. He actually was just out in Reno fighting. He's an alternate right now. But you know, you start to see this positive publicity being shown on individuals. You invest in them. You show them that, like, literally the sky is the limit. And they start to really internalize these things rather than the negative aspect of life. You feel good being able to open up a bank account, being able to buy some diapers, being able to put, yeah, and we may just be meeting the bare necessities, but at the same time, it feels so good to know that you're not going to lose your freedom, or you're not going to get gunned down in the streets trying to make some money and trying to pay your bills. Mm.
John Pineda is Leadership and Curriculum Specialist with Motivating Individual Leadership for Public Advancement in Salinas. Their approach to social transformation is grounded in La Cultura Cura, which promotes cultural healing. Demetria Huntsman is the Teens on Target Program Director of Youth Alive. They train high school students and young adults from neighborhoods with high levels of violence to present violence prevention workshops to middle and high school students. On today's Your Call, we are talking about youth gun violence, root causes, what changes need to be made. We decided to specifically focus on youth gun violence at a time when we're having a much needed conversation at the national level. All different kinds of gun violence tend to be lumped together, but they need to be dealt with separately. And so that's why we're talking specifically about youth gun violence. And then, of course, if you talk about that, you've got to talk about poverty, lack of access to fresh fruits and vegetables, for example, or in Salinas, lack of access to many resources. We'd love to hear from you if you work on these issues or if you have any questions for our guest today. 866-798-8255. 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Now, talking about resources, Demetria, in addition to the Oakland's Public Safety Council introducing new gun ordinances, I also read a story about money that's going to be allocated to various organizations, because a lot of, you know, politicians in Oakland realize that it's about a lot more than guns. You've got to fund these organizations like yours. So can you talk a little bit about these programs at Highland Hospital and then San Francisco General and how they're so important? These are some of the first trauma centers in the country to create initiatives dedicated to connecting gunshot victims with resources so they end this reviving cycle of violence.
Mm-hmm. Well, the program Caught in the Crossfire that we do here, that we facilitate here at Youth Alive, is a nationally recognized program, and we are first responders when there's a victim of violence. And the entire program was actually youth-led, and it was created around someone who was shot, and what he noticed was that his friends came to the hospital. They were the first responders, and yet his friends were focused on retaliation and revenge and vengeance, and it was an eye-opener to recognize that part of the reason why once you're shot, you're more likely to be shot again is because those root issues are not dealt with. So you know, you go out and your friends or your family members, you know, either they can continue to escalate the situation or the scenario, or even the person that has been injured can pursue and stay in the ongoing cycle that created the violence itself, and they're more likely to be re-injured. What's key to breaking that cycle is to giving that person, again, the resources and options. So the case management, to understand what do they need to complete school, what do they need to potentially relocate, what do they need to get their driver's license, to get get into counseling, get into therapy, deal with the trauma itself and the triggers that might keep you in that cycle. Everything, again, goes back to not just responding to the symptom of you got shot and, oh my goodness, let's treat this wound and let's make sure you don't get an infection, but what led up to, what is lacking, and what is creating this scenario where, either the interpersonal relationships or you're just involved in some, street activity, you're just involved in that because you don't have other options. How can we create other options so you can come out of that lifestyle? That's what the success is. That's why when we deal with clients, they are 100 times more likely not to be re-injured or not to, again, find themselves back in the trauma center or dead. So we need more opportunities, again, that just continue to treat the source and allow people to make those healthy changes in their lifestyle.
How do you both deal with the stigma around this issue? Because when you read articles, it's basically Demetria, kid got shot, another kid got shot, and we've had 50 gun deaths so far this year. And isn't this a lot? And the politicians give a quote, and that's it. They don't really talk about who these kids are, where they come from, why this is happening. And so then I notice in the comment sections of a lot of these articles, the response is, throw them away. And the story ends there. I mean, you do get longer stories and, like, for example, public radio, public television, that they're able to dive into these issues, but it's still pretty rare. John, what are your thoughts on that?
Well,
I mean, how do you get more people to kind of care about these root causes and to talk more deeply about this issue?
Well, the fact of the matter remains that we have to occupy those spaces in which, like, system leaders or those in charge of, like, shaping these policies and practices are actually convening, and I'm not saying that we're going to kick down the door or anything, but we might hold it open with our foot a little sternly and allow a couple people to go in there and really start, I guess you could say, decolonizing some of this language, because it's beyond us at times, and being able to think about what does that mean to the population right here? What does that mean to us? And how can we actually give you a little peek or a glimpse into something that you might not have ever seen before, which is our neighborhood, which is our household, which is our day-to-day intrapersonal conversations. There's a lot of things that are going on inside of us. So as often as we possibly can, engage that population and allow them to tell their story and allow them to offer up some type of suggested solutions or address the needs that need to be fulfilled. I think if it's done in a way that's proper, that's not really bashing, at times it does come out a little bashing, because justly so, some people are upset and they're hurt and things of that nature. But when we could get it to, all right, let's have a conversation. Find some type of common ground. We want the same things that you guys want. We want a safe community. We want to be able to pay our bills. We want to help mom and dad out. We don't want grandma to have to worry about where she's going to be able to pay for her pills, for her diabetes, or whatever's going on. So I know that there's been a lot of youth homicides, but I'm not the one doing it. In some senses, I'm actually a victim. So I think we just need to occupy those spaces.
Have you had, you said that some of the young kids you work with speak in front of the Board of Supervisors in Salinas. Have you been able to have conversations, good conversations with politicians?
Yeah, actually, as a matter of fact, we threw a Skate Por Vida, we called it, event, which is at Natividad Creek Park. And it's an area that's in the east side of Salinas, the heart of what's considered the I guess you could say the murder capital or whatever. That's where the majority of the homicides and violent acts can they occur in that area. So we threw a skate event right there. We had some youth come out, and it was a really safe time. The skateboard community, we had kind of what you would consider maybe the community that's not really looked at in the best light, I guess you could say, some of those stigmatized individuals, and it was very safe. So what happened as a result of that Skate Por Vida, we had these skaters tell us, hey, you know what, can you help us out? We need some benches out here. We need a water fountain. We need a light so we could skate at night. So they actually went over to the city council, lined up one by one, aired their grievances in a proper fashion, something that was intellectual. We coached them throughout the process. And what ended up happening was the mayor was like, why didn't you guys come to us directly? You know, and they ended up coming down to, not the mayor, but a woman from the city, another man from the city, Gary Peterson, Linda McGlone, shouts out to them, you know, for working with us and coming to our office. They actually came, sat down and said, you know what, we have X amount of dollars. Let's see what we could do for these youth. So we've had these opportunities to engage with some of the city officials. And at times it's like, oh my God, how do you guys do what you do? And you know, we do what we do just basically because these people can relate to us, and these people know that we have their best interests in mind.
John Pineda is Leadership and Curriculum Specialist with MILPA in Salinas, Motivating Individual Leadership for Public Advancement. Demetria Huntsman is Teens on Target Program Director with Youth Alive. And Demetria, what would you add? How do you deal with stigma? Because, you know, earlier I said that this Violence Policy Center report found that the majority of youth gun violence in Northern California is in Monterey. Alameda County is number 4. But Oakland tends to get so much more attention than Salinas, for example, in the media.
Yes, and actually, unfortunately, the stigma is difficult. And I think that, you know, that is one of the root causes of violence, is actually what is played out in the media, not just the over-reporting or the sensationalizing of what's happening in Oakland versus what's happening in other places, but even just sort of some of the negative images that even encourage violence and encourage a culture of violence. You know, our president just said in the last State of the Union address that we're the most powerful nation in this world and we don't have to fear, you know, around terrorism. And if you don't believe me, ask Osama bin Laden. Well, that was pretty threatening, and that was just reinforcing, you know, how we are supposed to respond to conflict. And that's the message, right? And so when you get all of these messages, it reinforces a culture that dictates a certain amount of behavior that that does, in fact, end up killing us. We work really hard against that stigma here in Oakland. Again, where you have all of these reports or people sensationalizing homicides as, oh, you know, this gang violence, and therefore we need this gang injunction, and we need these curfews, and young people are out of control, and young people don't care. But, you know, in fact, I have students who are going into middle school classrooms, and they're presenting to middle school kids, and they're answering questions, and they're acting out skits, and they're facilitating a curriculum designed around getting middle school students to recognize how they could avoid violence in their lives. It's an uphill battle to constantly fight that stigma. But yes, it is very negative, and it does reinforce a lot of the behavior that we see, unfortunately.
And that's through your Teens on Target program.
Yes, that's correct.
And just quickly, Demetria, we're almost out of time, but Billy writes in and wants to know what inspires you to do this work.
Well, I think that what inspires me to do this work is that, for one, I'm from the community. So my investment in Oakland comes from being an Oakland native and being invested in making the changes in my community that really change the conditions and the lifestyle that people have here. I'm raising my son here. You know, I grew up here. But I think, just like John said, everybody wants a fair quality of life. There's nothing different that we want than anyone else. You know, you want to be able to send your child to school and know that they're going to be safe at school. You want them to be able to come home from school. You want them to be able to use public transportation, go to a movie theater, go to a football game or a pep rally. You want them to have a carefree and healthy lifestyle, just like everyone wishes for their children. And you want that in your community. And so while we are dealing with these conditions, Ultimately, we're trying to change them because we are invested in creating the quality of life that we all deserve.
And just briefly, Demetria, we have a question from Ruby about guns. You spoke earlier about the fact that the majority of the shootings are conducted with illegal guns. And Ruby says, can anybody get a gun? Are they stolen? Are they purchased online?
When we go into the classrooms, we ask a question that will stop you dead in your tracks. And when the high school kids say, you don't have to answer with your mouth, you don't have to make any comment, we just ask middle school kids, 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, raise your hand if you are confident that you can access a gun. And literally 80% of the students in the classroom raise their hands. They can get a gun from a family member. They can get a gun from a neighbor. They can get a gun from another friend. Their guns have flooded our communities, and in my opinion, it started with the increase in crack cocaine and in the drug transactions that happen, and people turn to that lifestyle because they don't have other healthy options to turn to. Mm. Guns are flooding our our streets, and unfortunately, when they start off as legal guns, they're purchased somewhere. People might purchase them in Nevada and drive them into California, where those gun laws are different than the gun laws that we have in the state of California. Somebody, you know, purchased them in a gun store, and then they report it as stolen. They sell it to someone who sells it to someone who sells it to someone until it ends up on the street level.
Mm. Just quickly, are you seeing the same thing in Salinas, John?
You know, I wouldn't go as far as to like lay all of that out, but there is a lot of access to firearms. If an individual wanted to get a firearm, I could almost guarantee you that it wouldn't be that hard.
Mm. Well, we are definitely going to continue this conversation about youth gun violence and looking at the root causes. John Pineda is Leadership and Curriculum Specialist with MILPA in Salinas, Motivating Individual Leadership for Public Advancement. Dimitri Huntsman is the Teens on Target Program Director with Youth Alive in Oakland. John and Demetria, thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.